So we are with the divine personality who is always with us. All personalities, all beings will find their ultimate truth in him. There is a line of Sri Aurobindo which, you know, many of these lines which are so fascinating. One of them is that in one of his poems, like a titan I will take, like a god enjoy. Even the titans, and that you will see that in Sri Krishna's Vishwaroop, it's not only the goody-goody creature, they are all the gods and saints and sages. What does Arjun see? He sees even the Asur, the Rakshasa, all of them will find that truth. Say, and Mother gives an example in one of the places. Say a person who is conjuice, avarice, a completely self-centered man. Where is the truth? The truth in the ultimate concentration of the divine who holds everything within himself. But a man who is generous, extremely generous, to opposite tendencies, where does he find his truth? In that same divine personality who gives all of himself in creation. So we can go on, and every aspect, every personality will find its ultimate truth in the divine personality. So this personality is not something unreal, you know, to be just discarded and you have to lose it to get impersonal. It is only a temporary structure built by Maya, supported by nature. It has emerged after great labor. And to annul it back is actually reversing the clock. So we have, you know, without Savitri, pura maza nahi aata hai. So some lines, you know, have to be there. Secret knowledge, after describing everything, so many secrets Sri Aurobindo describes. What does he describe at the end? He describes the game. What is the game going on? And he says, this is a sailor on the world sailor on the flow of time. So world sailor is we, the soul is moving here and there. Now imagine, what is traditional this thing? Soul is going through all this. Janam janam ka phera aur pata nahi kitne, nahi, janam janam ka phera is marriage. Okay, so but janam karam ka phera, then one day, you know, it wakes up and it returns back. It sounds so silly at the end of, you know, who made this play and trapped us here? But that's not the truth. So Sri Aurobindo reveals, you know, that 84 lakh yoni. So here we have something very interesting. What is this traveler, the world traveler, this soul within, what is its ultimate niyati? Secret knowledge and the same truth Sri Aurobindo reveals. He sails through life and death and other life. He travels on through waking and through sleep. A power is on him from her occult force. What is that occult force? Is the Shakti which is hidden inside. Right now nature is moving him around, tossing and turning. Maya is playing, creating illusions. But there is something else that ties him to his own creation's fate. And never can the mighty traveler rest. So, you know, forget about rest. There is a work to do. And never can the mystic void cease till the nascent dusk is lifted from man's soul and the morns of God have overtaken his night. Now comes further. As long as nature lasts, he too is there. For this is sure that he and she are one. Even when he sleeps, he keeps her on his breast. Whoever leaves her, he will not depart. To repose without her in the unknowable. She will still be there. She will do the lori singing and say, you want to sleep? Okay. You want to escape? Okay. But where? She is the one who has to do that. It's not like suddenly you are coming out of Maya and, you know, divine being is just pulling you inside. To pull inside, there is Shakti needed. Without Shakti, nothing is done. So everywhere we will meet her. So we see this in Savitri, at ultimately that the Ishvara and Shakti is revealed in book 3, canto 2, where, you know, the adoration of the Divine Mother. So what is the game going on? There is a truth to know, a work to do. Her play is real. Why? Because it's all made of the substance of the real. A mystery he fulfills. There is a plan in the mother's deep world whim. a purpose in her vast and random game. This ever she meant since the first dawn of life, this constant will she covered with her sport. What is this will? To evoke a person in the impersonal void. With the truth light, strike earth's massive roots of trance, wake a dumb self in the inconscient depths, and raise a lost power from its python sleep, that the eyes of the timeless might look out from time, and the world manifest the unveiled divine. For this he left his white infinity, and laid on the spirit the burden of the flesh, that Godhead's seed might flower in mindless space. So actually, when we look at this whole story of creation, it's so amazing that even mankind passes through these four stages. First is like a brute, like an animal. Whatever way you are driven by instinct, you feel like eating, you go and eat, you do whatever you wish to do. Then the next step is social. To control the animal, society comes. So we obey the social norms, forms, whatever society says. Now, if there is no truth of the person and the personality, nature would, after this, just lead us away. But it creates persons and personality. The beautiful side is, and there we'll understand something of God's play, that it creates personality by confronting the person with the world consciousness. There is an actual wrestle which shapes us. And somebody said very beautifully, the best seashells are formed when the whole ocean, its waves, its force rush up against it. That's how they are formed. And we see them, you know, on these vendors. Look at how nature creates the beauty of a seashell, of the conch shells, even they. I mean, how it's a random process. It is to bear it. And everything that it bears, the same truth comes in several places when Shobindu describes in the Book of Fate that, you know, the spirit rises mightier with each defeat. Its godlike wings grow wide with every fall. All these are ultimately to evoke a person. So how do you evoke a person? This is the way you evoke a person. You wake him up. You remind him who you are. And then what you represent, as Draupadi does in Mahabharata. In Mahabharata, this Kichak who has, tried to pass some lurid comments. He is very strong. Very few can beat him. So he says, you come. Come over to my place. I am actually running this place. I am the king, designate. Though I am the brother-in-law, but actually even the king is afraid of me. So Draupadi goes to kitchen where Bhim is sleeping. Bhim is sleeping with his, after a huge good meal. He is a rasoi. He is there as the rasoi. What is it called? Rasoi. Nahi. English mein kya bolte? Cook, okay. He is a chef. Cook doesn't look nice for Bhima. He is a master chef because he was a good cook. So he has made cook, everybody has slept, and he is sleeping. Now Kichak doesn't know. These are her husband and who are they. So that dialogue is so fascinating. Draupadi goes and says, ah, how dare you sleep like this? Now imagine, you know, Bhim gets up. Who can challenge me and disturb me in my sleep? So he's angry. Who has disturbed me? Then he sees Draupadi. He says, what happened? He says, you are shameless. You are sleeping like this. He says, what has happened? He says, only you eat food and enjoy. He says, but what is it? It's a very powerful dialogue. And then Draupadi, because she was an avatar of Mahakali, no? So she wakes him up finally. He says, you know what has happened? What has transpired? There is this fellow called Kichak. And he says, there is nobody who can challenge me. And look at Bhima, my husband. He is lying after taking a full meal. So this is called evoking a person out of the impersonal void. And so Bhima goes and Arjun goes and the rest is history. And that's how the Kauravas come to know. Because they know that they were only six persons who could defeat Kichak. One of them is Krishna, the other is Balaram, third is Bhishma, fourth is Karna, and fifth is, I think, Duryodhan, perhaps, and the sixth is Bhima. So he says, none of us have done it, so obviously this is Bhima is there. That's how they got the clue. So this is called, through the challenges of life, it evokes a person. And that's the secret of God's game. That's what he is going to reveal to us. Page 368. If we admit the divine being, the supreme person, and all person as the Ishwara. Now Ishwara is not just Brahman, Sagun Brahman, who is holding all the qualities. He is not just the witness Purusha who is giving indifferent sanction. Ishwara means Lord. He is not just the temporary Ishwara, the gods who have each a domain. He is Ishwara, the Lord of creation. So he is the creator, the Lord. A difficulty arises in understanding his rule or governance of world existence. Okay? But how is he governing the world? Because we immediately transfer to him our mental conception of a human ruler, we picture him as acting by the mind and mental will in an omnipotent, arbitrary fashion upon a world on which he imposes his mental conceptions as laws, and we conceive of his will as a free caprice of his personality. That's how we take. Ishwara means he is on one side, he is not on the other. This was asked to mother. And mother says, no, I am with truth wherever it is. We may have our sides necessary for our own purposes, but the divine does not act according to that. She acts according to the truth of each creature. We may have one understanding. Somebody used to constantly, for example, curse and belittle people in the ashram. There was a person. And you know, they asked the mother, why are you tolerating him? Why are you keeping him here? He says, yes, I know, because he tells all this about, you know, ashram inmates. One day, try telling him anything against me and see the reaction. He loved the mother. That's the strange part. So she acts not based on our outer knowledge. Nobody knew this. She acts according to the deep hidden truth and what the person has to become. Not according to an arbitrarily ruler who would just, you know, if you don't listen to me, I'll dismiss you. There is that nice story, and this goes with Aurobindo's this wonderful creation. So the story goes that somebody asked a king that, king asked his people, who is greater, me or God? And now, you know, there is a catch. So one child says, I'll answer, to cut a long story short. He says, you are greater, obviously. Ah, see, he knows. Okay, will you tell these people how I am greater? He says, you can do something which God cannot do. What is it that God cannot do? If you are annoyed, you can throw him out of your kingdom. But God cannot throw anybody out of his kingdom, because his kingdom is everywhere. And there are so many stories of Aurobindo and the mother. One of them where he is asked that, why did he go away? Why did you send? He said, no, I didn't send him. He ultimately felt like going away, because that person had a lot of things in. He says, still he says, Aurobindo is almost apologetically saying, I didn't send him. He went away. So he says, but what about the grace? He says, what if the person refuses grace? And then he says, but the grace still accompanies. So that's how, you know, because that's how the divine governance works. Through everything it takes. It doesn't work in an arbitrary way as a ruler. That I will pray. He's not an ATM machine. It's not omnipotence minus omniscience. So that also he's describing to us. But there is no need for the divine being to act by an arbitrary will or idea as an omnipotent yet ignorant human being, if such an omnipotence were possible. So we pray, he has to grant us. So genie in the bottle we want. Divine is omnipotent. Arey bhai, he is also omniscient. He is not going to just grant. That's why Sri Aurobindo says that, you know, all prayers are heard. But not everything will be granted, and it may not be granted right away. There is a reason behind it. Hearing is okay. But he may or may not grant, because he is omniscient. He knows what should be granted and when and what is best. So, and there are some very interesting examples of that. Mother says people pray so ignorantly. So there was a boy, God's problem, she is saying, if he were to grant. So if there was a boy whose father would not let him pursue the spiritual life, so he would pray that, why, see, I am held a hostage by my father. What to do? So then his father fell seriously ill. Then he started saying, God, you are so cruel. My father is ill. You must intervene and stop it. So he started recovering. And then he again held him captive. So mother said, this is how our problem is. We don't even know what we need truly. That's why the greatest wisdom is, let thy will be done. Because that will is one with the omniscience of the divine. So he says that if such a omnipotence were possible, means omnipotence without omniscience, that's what we want. God, knowledge apne paas rakho. Wisdom humko mat batao. Hum wise hain. Humko kar do. We want a God who will not give us the truth of things, but who will do things for us. So he says that is not possible. He says if such a thing were possible, might do, for he is not limited by mind. He says he may act like that. You have prayed, but he is infinite. You pray, you get a result, even though it is not good for you in the ultimate vision. These two people ask the mother, why does the divine grant us something when it is actually not good for us? She says, perhaps to make you conscious through experience. You are every day asking for Rasgulla, every day going on, your mind is stuck on Rasgulla. So one day he says, okay, take the Rasgulla. Ah, what a lovely divine, he has granted me my Rasgulla. Now after one Rasgulla, you want another Rasgulla. Then a third Rasgulla. After some time, doctors say, you know, you have diabetes. Still you want Rasgulla. After some time, you say, take these Rasgullas all away from me. I don't want any further. See, this sometime we learn. That's how Sri Aurobindo says, that if you leave it to God, he will exhaust your sins subjectively. But if you insist on your way, then he will do it objectively through painful experiences. If you trust him, then you will have the feelings and desires, and all, you'll go through everything like Sahanadi asking, you know, Lord, you know what, Lord, I have desire to eat lobsters, crabs and all the things, he says. And Sri Aurobindo says, eat your desire. So he will leave it. But if you leave it to yourself, then your situation will be like the man who prepared kathel ki sabji after stealing kathel, jackfruit, and made puris. But he has stolen from somebody's garden, so he is feeling guilty. So he sent the tiffin to Sri Aurobindo, knowing well that Sri Aurobindo will take one bite and then he will send it down. So now we have absolved ourselves by giving the stolen fruit to Sri Aurobindo. Now, nothing wrong with that, but Sri Aurobindo, who knows all the intent, so they are waiting. Ah, today we'll have the cut jackfruit vegetable. And then it comes, but the tiffin is empty. Say, how did Sri Aurobindo will never eat so much? He would eat very little. He said, no, I don't know why today Sri Aurobindo, after tasting, asked all of us to have it. So we enjoyed. It was very tasty. So, yeah, this is a story which I have heard, very authentic, that, you know, the tiffin comes down and it is empty. So the Lord, he will make us exhaust them objectively. Then it will be like we have it, but we cannot enjoy it. So these are his ways. So either ways, poor fellow gets guilty. If he doesn't give us, he is guilty of not giving us what we want. If he gives us and either takes it away or we are unable to enjoy, again he is guilty. So that's where he is trying to remind, that sometimes he may act like that. He has an all consciousness in which He is aware of the truth of all things and aware of his own all wisdom, working them out according to the truth that is in them, their significance, their possibility or necessity, the imperative selfness of their nature. So he acts according to the total truth. Another story, when Narad says, all my life I have been a bachelor, I have never experienced what it means to be married. So he hears about a Swayamvar and he is very close to Lord Vishnu. He says, I can have anything. He says, can you just change my form so that I can, you know, I am not looking very good, so I can go there and get married. The princess chooses me. I want to experience a little bit of this married life. So Vishnu says, okay, go. So he goes and he is waiting and everybody is laughing when they look at him. And then the princess comes near him. Now he thinks, I must be the most beautiful person because Lord has changed my form. But the princess looks, laughs and walks away. Now he is surprised what has happened. He looks in the waters and sees his face is changed into a monkey's. That's how the Lord sent him. He changed the face. Then he curses. You know, you made my face like a monkey. One day you will need the monkeys. So you see, there is a totality in that story, which includes everything, including one of the excuses for the birth of the Ram avatar. So in every action of the divine, there are simultaneously many points that are being touched. And not we want in isolation only for me, but the whole creation is interconnected. And truth, the whole creation is further interconnected, connected with the truth of things. So that's how he acts. So he says, the divine is free. So we say, well, he is free, he can do anything, he is omnipotent and free. So he says, yes, the divine is free and not bound by laws of any making. But still he acts by laws and processes because they are the expression of the truth of things. Can he bypass the law? Yes. But he may not bypass the law. He may want you to go through the law. That's the interesting part. And we can take several examples. Like you write to the Prime Minister or the President. Now if you are in general category, most of them will be read by his PA and thrown away. But then there may be a time when somebody has developed a close relation with the president or the prime minister. Then you have a free access. You have to develop to that point where now the divine begins to act upon you, bypasses the law. That's how Aurobindo says there are three things which operate in the world. One is the law. It has been made with a purpose, and that purpose is not reward and punishment, but to help us evolve. Evolve where? Towards the person, personality, and then evolve towards the divine plan. So there is the law. Then there is the compassion. Compassion intervenes in the net of the law. It doesn't change the law, but you are going through suffering, but somebody is there helping you, supporting you, you go through it. He mitigates. And then he says there is the grace which completely cancels the law. All these three are simultaneously active. But we cannot dictate which one will act where and when. So we see with the story of Arjun, sometimes the divine lets him go through. And sometimes he tweaks the whole nature, physical nature, just to, for his, it seems, for his disciple. He is himself. Okay, so how does he act? So each law is the expression of the truth of things. Not their mechanical, mathematical or other outward truth alone, which is how we understand the transactional karmic law, but the deeper truth. But the spiritual reality of what they are, what they have become and have yet to become, what they have it within themselves to realize. That answers Surdas this question, Karman ki gati nyari. उज्जवल पंख दिए बगुले को कोयल के ही भिधिकारी मूरख मूरख राज करत हैं पंडित फिरत भिकारी. Now there is a meaning and purpose in it. He is not acting, he is preparing. Sri Krishna prepares the Gwal Bal. Why? He has done all the magics, no, in the jail, killed all the asuras like this. He could have done this to Kansa also. Suddenly there should have been a bajli and Kansa would have just flashed and died. We imagine God like that, like cinema, all these cinema show. Suddenly he is praying to God and there is a bijli chamakti hai, and then you know something happens and Devi ka trishul aake lag jata hai. Because that's how we imagine God's intervention. But very often this may not happen. Why? Because he is to prepare the Gwal Bal that when freedom comes from Kansa, then they should be ready. Otherwise, there will be another tyrant sitting in place of Kansa. So there is a preparation which he does. So that's where we see he is working. He is himself present in the working, but he also exceeds and can overrule it. Had he killed Ravan right away, the Leela would not have taken all this. Had he not listened to his father, actually later on he said, don't go. Had mother Sita not come with him, there would have been no war. But all the Asuras would have continued unabated. So all becomes part of the Leela. But he also exceeds and can overrule it. For on one side, nature works according to her limited complex of formulas and is informed and supported in their execution by the divine presence. But on the other side, there is an overseeing, a higher working and determination, even an intervention, free but not arbitrary. There is a wisdom behind it. It's not arbitrary that anywhere and everywhere God will intervene. Free but not arbitrary, often appearing to us magical and miraculous because it proceeds and acts upon nature from a divine supernature. It's a whole category. Wherever we stand, that determination will act. If we stand close to supernature, hurled ourselves in her lap, highest determinism acts. But if we remain tied to this lower nature, we believe body is the only reality and keep praying, mother, do this, do that, go through the normal process of evolution. That's how it works. So we have a very strange instance, again, all literatures, our Puranic literature, where Markandeya is born to a sage and his wife who pray to Shiva. Shiva says, see, I can come, because they want Shiva to come as their child. He says, I can come, but you know what? I can't stay in the human body for long, because my life is beyond the Samshan. So, in Hanuman, Rudra Avatar, he could take. He says, I can't stay. So 12 years or 16 years he will live. Then I'll come back. I'll come like that. Otherwise, you can take another Guni child who will, you know, live for a long time, take care of you all. So in that moment, they say, no, you come, even if it be short life. So he becomes the later on the sage Markandeya. But as the story goes, when he is young, he is a great bhakt of Shiva. And when the moment comes, death comes. Yama comes and says, your moment is over. And at that point, he clings to Shiva. He is praying that time. And as he clings to Shiva, Shiva appears as Mahakal. So he says, but you are the one who determined the time of his departure. He says, yes, but I am the one who is now cancelling it. You see, that's how Prabal Prem ke paale padkar Prabhu ko niyam badalte dekha. Apna maan rahe na rahe, par bhakt ka maan na talte dekha. So as we grow closer, a higher and higher, but we can't play the game. Oh, achha, okay, if we are close to mother, then, you know, she will, it doesn't work with a calculating mind. It has to come by giving oneself completely, and that too Sri Aurobindo will tell us. The mechanical, mathematic, automatic law of things is a fact, but within it there is a spiritual law of consciousness at work, which gives to the mechanical steps of nature's forces an inner turn and value, a significant rightness, and a secretly conscious necessity. This is what happens even ordinarily. So this transactional idea of karmic law, you gave 100 rupees, next life you will get 100 rubles, because dollar will have no value by the time we come back in another life. It won't work like that. It doesn't work with or without interest. So it's not just a mechanical law. There is a spiritual sense behind it. Our view of the divine government of the world or the secret of its action is either incurably anthropomorphic. He has to act like us. Incurably anthropomorphic. Or else incurably mechanical. Everybody did the same mantra, everybody got the same result. That's how pandits also preach. Oh, you have this problem? Do Mahamrityunjaya mantra. Oh, you have this problem? Do Hanuman Chalisa. And then the poor fellow is running from here to there, changing all the gods. Because it doesn't work mechanically. The mother goes on to even say about her own mantra. He says, one person may, if it comes naturally, may realize. Another person, it may leave him cold like turkey. So there is no mechanical process here. There is a deep truth which is operating within. Our view of the divine government of the world or of the secret of its action is either... So this is how. Both the anthropomorphism and mechanism have their elements of truth, but they are only a side. If we believe he is acting like human being, sometimes it may look like, oh, and then we say, ah, grace. But the higher game begins when he takes away. Then you say, well, what happened? Every time the mother heard my prayer, somebody wrote once, says, every time whatever I asked mother gave. But this time I don't know, look, the last 5 years I am praying, but mother is not giving anything. I said, she is taking you seriously now. She has changed the rules of the game. You are being promoted to the next level. That's how he does. So all these things. And the real truth is that the world is governed by the one in all and over all, who is infinite in his consciousness, and it is according. And it is according to the law and logic of an infinite consciousness that we ought to understand the significance and building and movement of the universe. So where does that leave us? Pray, aspire, but doesn't matter. If it comes, grace. If it doesn't come, greater grace. Heaven's wiser love rejects the mortal's prayer. This line in Savitri. So either ways, it's a grace. So now he says, so if we take it like that, if we regard this aspect of the one reality and put it in close connection with the other aspects, we can get a complete view of the relation between the eternal self-existence and the dynamics of the consciousness force by which it manifests the universe. So then he describes the whole mechanism about Maya Shakti. And then he says, yes, he gives the sanction, the Tathastu, let it be so. We can absorb ourselves in the silence. And that also, the Shakti is there. But it becomes the Shakti which is self-absorbed. Just like before the Big Bang, energy is in a state of quiescence. So there is that state. So Shakti is everywhere. There is nothing like you leave Shakti and get absorbed in the silence. Okay, now we will see on page 371. He brings this reality. We see, page 371, somewhere in the middle, we see the biune aspect of self and self-power, then in the person aspect, a dual person emerges, Ishvara Shakti, the divine self and creator, and the divine mother and creatrix of the universe. There becomes apparent to us the mystery of the masculine and feminine cosmic principles. This is what nature is trying to reproduce. Shobindo goes on to say in his one of the last writings, not one of, the last writing other than Savitri. Savitri continued till, and this is in Supramental Manifestation. He goes on to say that even in the relationship that we normally, mother was asked what is the truth behind the relationship of man and a woman, she just simply said Purusha and Prakriti. And Shobindo reveals that even this has, everything of it cannot be eliminated because it has a deep truth high above in the relation of Ishvara and Shakti. But obviously for right reasons they are not revealing it. Otherwise everybody will start seeing a Shakti everywhere. But there is a deep truth within it. It comes from the biune truth, and everywhere in creation we will see the masculine and the feminine fulfilling each other. In the Suprema, in principles whose play and interactions are necessary for law creation, in the superconscient truth of the self-existence, these two are fused and implied in each other, one and indistinguishable. Meaning thereby, first we have to reach there. Let's not play suddenly a game which we are not ready for. First do the practice, separate the Purusha from Prakriti. Realize the Brahman getting free from all illusions. Realize the Vidyamay Maya and her intent and the way she plays. Then when we are one in the divine, in the supramental divine, then the Ishvara Shakti game has a meaning. But as each of us as a portion of the Divine Mother, it is through her being, through her, that the being, the self, the Ishvara acts, and he does nothing except by her. Through his will, though his will is implicit in her, it is she who works out all as the Supreme Consciousness Force, who holds all souls and beings within her, and as executive nature, all exists and acts according to nature. All is the Consciousness Force manifesting and playing with the being in millions of forms and movements into which he casts his existence. Now we understand why on 24th November, after the complete identification with Sri Krishna in the very physical and the completion of the Siddhi, the whole arrangement changed. Now, people had to go through the mother, which many people couldn't understand. Because now this is the original arrangement. Now the Ishvara, the Purushottama, has become one with the very physical being of Sri Aurobindo. And the mother had already realized earlier that Sri Aurobindo says that now the real process can start. And that's where we see this happening. So it means that we can relate. Well, it is through her that the being... Okay. So... But it is in her quiescence and silence that we are quiescent and seized. Okay. So we come to the last four lines on this page. If we would affirm our independence of nature, she reveals to us the supreme and omnipresent power of the Ishvara and ourselves as beings of his being. So is there a truth of our individual personality? Yes, there is a truth which is independent of nature, because nature is the lower Prakriti. And then she reveals us as we are being of her being, of the being of the Ishvara. But that power is herself, and we are that in her supernature. If we would realize a higher formation or status of being, now he gives us the master key. You want to reach that point, what is nature is trying to do, then all these processes, the divine himself is behind ignorant nature, pushing her, leading us through all the ups and downs and through all the waves and tides of nature. But this is where you have to reach. So what is the way? Beautiful. Then it is still through her, through the divine Shakti, the consciousness force of the spirit, that it has to be done. Our surrender must be to the divine being through the divine mother. For it is towards or into the supreme nature that our ascension has to take place, and it can only be done by the supramental Shakti taking up our mentality and transforming it into her supramentality. So this is where we have to go very clearly, and that's why Sri Aurobindo says the supramental yoga begins with surrender. It proceeds through surrender and ends with surrender. Begins with central surrender, that okay, yes, you are the ultimate mother, take us. But that's not enough. Now every aspect of lower nature, the Sri Aurobindo uses the word allegiance to lower nature that the Purusha has given. We have sanctioned the lower game. So we have to withdraw a sanction. So first step is becoming the witness. Surrender means that now I'll go as the Divine Mother wants me to go. But first is, I have sanctioned this game. I can't play two things. I can, but means Purusha half caught here, half there. But she will ensure, once she accepts, then slowly she will ensure what she has said in one of her beautiful conversations. He says, if you turn to the divine and say, I am yours. And the divine says, yes. And then you hold on to the world. He will make sure that nothing in you will belong there. You will come that side. So we have only one choice. Go like a crying baby. Mother, Mira, why this happened? Mother, why that happened? Why somebody I loved has been taken away? Mother, why this, that? Or we can go happily. At the end, we will reach that point. The last document of the mother, if we see. Let thy will be done. Let thy will be done. Let thy will be done. This is the last word of wisdom. But she will let us try our way. Because we are not ready. So she allows. In that she will intervene. Ah, I went, I had this problem. I prayed to mother and I got an answer. Yes. She will allow. Because that's how we have to grow. We are very happy when something we wished or hoped or wanted may not have actively desired, and that happens. We are very happy. She plays that game. But slowly she will start upping the game. And take us to the point where Draupadi, at the end of everything, what does she say? He says, I have tried these fellows, elders, these powerful warriors, they failed me. I have tried my husbands, most powerful men in the world, they have failed me. I have called you by names, you have also not come. But I know you are seated in my heart. Will you intervene? And Krishna comes and everything changes. And then she asks Krishna, why you took so long? She said, did you call me from the nearest? You called, you were expecting all this. So, divine will play according, it gives that freedom. You want to play this level of game? Because rules are also his. He knows. After a point, automatically the game will change. It's there. Inbuilt, programmed. You want to go like this? Okay, fine. You go like this. You raise the tariffs, your problem. But the game is designed by the divine. We should not forget. So ultimately there will come a point when suddenly the game will change. And now you'll say, why things happened this way? We were not expecting it, wanting it. Because there is somebody else who calls the shots. So at whatever level we are, he will play the game. One last little story of a man who steals from a temple. And he becomes rich and everything. And the pandit knows that probably he is the thief. And his wife says, see, you are like a fool praying there. See this man, he has stolen. Nothing happened. He has built a whole house. He is enjoying life. Every day you are praying, nobody keeps an account. By the way, earlier the temples were our banks. They were the place where people actually gave gold. And that was used by the king as a treasury for whatever governance was needed. It was a very beautiful system. Because in the name of God we will give. But income tax we will not give. That's what people have not understood. So we should have something like, you know, giving for religious purpose, we'll give generously. So every day she is coaxing him. Are, what is there? You have such a nice relation with God. Every day you are praying. One day you just pick up one of the offerings. You know, it's okay. He is not going to say anything to you. See, that thief. So one day he says, okay. He picks up a diamond ring somebody has offered. And as he comes out, by his bad luck, the man who had offered and some minister, they are walking and they see this ring. What is this you are taking? Oh, you are a thief. And he is put in the jail. He says, what kind of a God is this? Every day I am praying. This is my fate. And that fellow, who is actually a known scoundrel, and he has even stolen from the deity, and nothing has happened. Then he is praying, so God appears. So he says, you know, he is an idiot, he is a fool. So this is all he understands. So let him go through this phase. It's okay, don't worry. But you are a person who has the knowledge, and you are a person who is wise. You have said that I pray to you for yourself. How could you steal from what was offered here? See, that's why we understand that while Duryodhana does all kinds of mischief, he is allowed to go scot-free. Actually, his death is also, dekha jaye to, in a war, ultimately he enjoyed life. But Yudhishthir makes one mistake, and he, along with all the brothers, 13 years in exile. So as we grow in consciousness, the divine's ways change. As we grow nearer to him, the need for vigilance increases. Of course, the mother's grace is there. She cushions everything. So that's why the more we come closer to the divine, mother says, the more we feel the overwhelming action of the grace. And the more we should live by the grace. And by living by the grace means, let thy will be done. You know what is best for me. You do whatever you think is best. That's the ultimate relation. And then the divine mother takes us from the lower creation into the higher creation, which is what we are meant to be. Okay, so we'll meet tomorrow for the last session. It'll be only one session because it's like just we summarize and enter into the next chapter. So 5:15 to maybe 6 to 6:15 latest. So tomorrow we'll have only one session. Jai Maa.